Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, Laughers. I am so excited to introduce you to Dick Yancey, the owner, and Jack Yancey, director of operations at Melrose Civil War Caverns in Harrisonburg. It's more than a museum. It's a time capsule. Thanks to the unique protection of time and the elements, when you take a tour of this historic site, you will see it in much of the same condition that the Union soldiers would have experienced it over 150 years ago. Beyond the rock formations, you will also see the very places where the soldiers lived, ate, stored provisions, and more. It's truly a hidden gem right here in the valley that just opened up in 2020 after being closed since 1968. Welcome to the show, Dick and Jack. It's so great to have you both on today.
Thank you for having us.
Good to be here.
Yeah, this is so great. I just not long ago took a tour of the caverns with my husband, and your tour guide, Andrew, was amazing, PD Dubs. And I was so impressed with the caverns, him and the tour. I was mega hoping that both of you would say you'd come on the show today. And now here we are. And I can't wait to share with the Laughers more about Melrose Caverns. So this is so exciting. Thanks again. That's me clapping. I wanted to start with this question. Can you share with us why has it been closed since 1968 and what inspired you all to reopen it in 2020?
I'll take that. I think the whole history of the cavern sort of hit the bad points of history. It opened in 1929, which was not a good economic year to open a business. Then it had to go through the Depression, which again was not a great time to be running a business. World War II arrived and there was no gasoline, and the caverns actually shut down during the war because the whole thing was built on the idea in the 20s of people getting out in cars and traveling in cars and spending nights and vacations. And Route 11 was part of that. So it was an attraction that was built for that. The 1950s, I suspect, were reasonably good. But in the late 50s, early 60s, Interstate 81 came along and the commercial traffic left at Route 11 and went to 81. And by 1968, it was felt it was probably economically best for the people who leased the caverns from us to close their business.
Wow. And so then what prompted that to happen in 2020 to come back alive, as they say?
Well, I think we as a family realized there had been a resurgence in the interest in caves. And I spoke with some of the local other cave owners and realized there was a large market in it. And we had the opportunity through historic tax credits to be able to put lights back in the cave. And so we took advantage of that opportunity and new technology in lighting to bring it back to life for commercial purposes.
Is that a very involved process, getting historic tax credit for that kind of business? Does that take a lot of paperwork?
It's a real process. You have to start with an historic architect, is my recommendation. Then you have to make application. There's a three-part application you have to make with the Virginia Department of Historic Resources. And they're great to work with. They're very flexible within their requirements. And you go through that process of applications, finally ending up with a financial review of it. With that, you will get a 20% federal credit and a 25% Virginia credit for all of your expenditures, which is really helps in the rehabilitation of all historic structures in Virginia.
Wow. So from the time you ask the question, how do I do this, to actually obtaining the historic tax credit, what kind of time frame is that? Is a couple months or?
You know, I would say from the beginning until you know that you have acceptance of those credits, you know, it can be 6 months to a year. It also that depends on the period of time you takes for you to do the improvements, which can be phased. So it could stretch out over, I think, up to a 5-year period, depending on how long it takes you to do the rehabilitation.
And so that was part of your process, I imagine, in terms of getting the caves ready or the caverns ready and putting the lighting in there. What did it take to get the caverns ready for the public to experience the underground history of the Civil War there?
Well, originally, we had to go in and we had to take out the wiring of that had 1920s technology in it, which I didn't think was safe anymore and not to be reused. And then we had to rewire it with, we've used LED
low voltage wiring.
Low voltage wiring.
So it's very safe and highly energy efficient.
And it also for the people who have preservation of caves, it creates less heat and therefore less environmental impact on the lighting in there. So it's incentivized by the cave associations to use this type of lighting.
So as a member of the National Cave Association, we're able to reach out to other caves and see how they do things and learn from, you know, their successes and their mistakes. So if you go to other caves, I'm not going to name any specific ones, but you will see that they have older lights that generate heat, which creates algae on top of the formations, because down in the cave, you have a humid environment. And so the humidity with that heat will create that algae. By sticking with the LED lights, we're able to minimize that damage to all of the formations and the etchings on the walls.
Wow, that's really great. How long did it take? Go ahead.
There's a group in Germany that actually does electrical engineering and plans for this lighting, but I suspected that was very expensive. And so I had my local electrical provider, our electrical electrician, to go in. And I said, look, let's just give this a try. He said, well, how do you want to do it? I said, just try something. And if it looks good, we'll keep doing it. If not, we'll change it. And so, he was very successful with that. His guys, his electricians became engaged in it. And they would find, you know, things that we hadn't seen for 50 years down in there and get excited and call me up. They come down here and look at this. We're going to put a light on this. We're going to put a spotlight on this. We're, you know, we're real. You probably haven't seen this before. And I probably hadn't seen it in 50 years, but they really took it on as a project.
What were some of the things they were most excited about to show you and bring you down in the cave to say, look at this, look at this?
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I go. I mean, they found this shield that was etched in by the Union soldiers. And later on, you can see when after the war, the Confederates came in and kind of scratched it out. But anyway, they put a spotlight on it and had me real excited that I come back and see what they'd done and look at it. And, you know, just that kind of thing.
I think the coolest one is the American flag at the exit, where you can see they etched into the wall, "Let it wave, Union 1862.
Yes, I was impressed by that too. I like that. It's a lot of, you know, drawings in there. And it was over 100 names that are etched and written by the soldiers, but they weren't all Union soldiers, right? So what can you tell us about some of those?
So there are a variety of signatures in there, basically four categories. But the three that we really touch on are the Union soldiers that were in there, who are predominantly from Illinois, Ohio, and Indiana. And so those you'll see in certain parts. Then there are also the family signatures. So families from the area, and they're usually friends of the Harrisons. And then the third that you'll see are Confederates that came in sometimes after the war. One example of those are the Valley Rangers. And they came in, they were a group of men who were here in the Valley trying to protect people's homes. And so after the war, they came back to the cave and etched their names 10 years later.
Wow. And what do they use to etch their names in there? How did they make that happen?
Yeah. So there are four different types of etchings that you'll see throughout the cave. The first is generally scratching somehow. So either a knife or the ends of bayonets, because as you know, the ends of the bayonets would clip off of the gun. Those you'll know because they're very sharp and crisp looking. The second type that you'll see are ash, because you have to remember that the entire place was traversed by the soldiers with torchlight. And so they would use the ash on the ends of their torches to paint up onto the walls and ceilings. The third that you'll see is charcoal or graphite. These are generally darker and more distinct. Those are staying longer. They're more well preserved as opposed to the ash because of how particulate the ash is. And with the humidity down there, it is starting to fade. And the final one that you'll see is iron oxide, which has an orange tinge to it. And that's because it is heated iron bars that were then pushed into the wall to create that orange look.
Yeah, if I remember right from the tour, too, it was a bit of a lengthy process to get their names etched on the caverns. How long did it take on average to get their name on the wall?
Who knows?
Yeah,
definitely several hours. We had someone visit the other day, and they have the diary of their ancestor that was in there. And he talks about being in the cave and how they knew they had been in there.
Did they show you this diary entry? Did they have it with them or more of sharing the story about it?
They did not, but okay. I know that my uncle has seen it in real life. They visited about 20 years ago and then came back again. It was great because they came and they had this picture of my uncle and he was still a young man then.
I love that, Razin Uncle. That's good. I'm loving that already. How were the caverns originally formed?
So there are two types of caverns in general. There are horizontal caverns and vertical caverns. Vertical caverns are usually seismic activity. So other caverns here would be Grand, I believe, is vertical. So you'll see that the striations in the walls go more up and down. We are a horizontal cavern, so we're formed by water, and you'll note that because of the striations that are parallel with the ground, as well as the fact that it's smoothed over from the water rubbing up against the rock.
Wow. So what would be the estimation of time that it took to create the caverns there?
Different parts, you can tell, were separate at different points. But 100,000 years, a million years ago, it's a long time. And it wasn't made in just, like I said, one go of it. There are several sections, and there's even a lower caverns beneath where you were walking, because everything that you saw when you were in there, we've put down in artificial resurfaced the floor. And so that's actually covered up the entrance to the lower caverns.
And there's not access right now to the lower caverns?
No.
Will that be in the future, or is it not in the plans?
I think we have enough to take care of right now.
I think so too. What is another question I had for you is, what is the earliest known use of the caverns before the Union soldiers? It's been around a long time, these caverns, so I imagine somebody else may have been in there.
Well, my family actually got ownership of the land in February of 1748. As a grant from the King of England, and we've owned it ever since in the family. Prior to that, we have two authenticated Indian carvings, which you may have seen, which indicates that Native Americans used the cave. When they did, and when they started and ended, who knows? That we know that's the usage. It was then at various names. It was, I guess, discovered by my ancestors, its original entrance on top of the hill, which I think you probably went by and Andrew showed you where the yes. original entered it. I think it was in the early 1800s is when they actually improved the entrance by carving into the limestone rock and sort of made some steps down into there. And at that time, I think at that time it was known as Harrison's Cave. Because my mother's family were Harrisons of Harrisonburg, actually John Harrison owned the property. His brother was Thomas Harrison that gave the land for Harrisonburg.
What?
And his other brother, Daniel, of course, has the property in Dayton, Virginia, or had the property in Dayton, Virginia.
Which is Fort Harrison.
So, it was a known cave, at least in the by the early 1800s.
1818 was David Harrison, I believe.
By that point, it was David Harrison.
This is incredible, rich family history ties to Harrisonburg that I had no idea about until we got on the show today. That makes this even more exciting. So you have some family history book about all of this, starting with the land granted to you from England, from the king?
Yeah. It's the Settlers by the Long Gray Trail is probably the best encyclopedia of the history of the Harrison family in the valley.
That's incredible. I don't think I've ever met anybody that's been granted land from the king in the 1700s.
It was the second piece of land that John Harrison acquired. His first piece was Lacey Spring and that area down there. And at the time, in order to perfect your title to the land, you had to go to Williamsburg to record it. And you can imagine a trip to Williamsburg wasn't like a trip to Williamsburg today. You just didn't go and come back, go in the
same
morning.
Same day, yeah.
It was a long trek to Williamsburg to perfect your title. So as I read it, sometimes people, it took them a couple of years before they actually got to Williamsburg. They used the land, but by the time they got to Williamsburg and actually perfected their title.
And so has this land, what is the historic use of the land? More personal versus farming?
Farming.
Okay. And what kinds of things were farmed on the land originally? Do you know?
Well, a lot of the farming at the time that took place here was the growing of wheat, which was turned into flour and then in the local mills and then was shipped, sold in Baltimore and Alexandria. And it was also a lot of cattle farming because of the extensive grass that grows here in the valley.
Okay, and it's not really a farming business today, is it?
Well, I rent it to a fellow who runs some beautiful cattle. He does a great job, and I enjoy his cattle, but I don't have to do the work.
That's the best way to do it, Dick. That's the best way to do it. I like the way you think. That's really awesome. So this family history, they knew where the caves were. So did they let the Union soldiers know it was there? Is that how that worked? So how did the Union soldiers find this cave?
It's hard to say. My guess was it was sort of common knowledge or you heard about it. That's all I know. I don't know if you have a better answer to that.
So there are two answers. So there is the more mythic answer. So General Banks, as he was going through the valley, really loved pears. And right now where the guest station sits are two pear trees. And so he stopped and set up camp there because he wanted some of these amazing pears. And he, let his soldiers go back and explore. And upon exploring back there, they found the entrance to the cave and descended into it and decided to hide in there because it was a good place to be. One of the reasons that there are so many Union names and not Confederate names is the Confederates were not hiding in the valley. Mm-hmm. They knew there and it was home turf. One of the more truthful parts of it is that, so we have one of the older houses there. It's a pre-Civil War house because many of them were burned in the valley. And so one of the things is that they had a water source. And so the soldiers were able to get water at, that house there. And so they decided not to burn the house. And upon staying there, went back and found the caverns.
You got to think about, in the wintertime, it's 55 degrees down there. So as opposed to living out in the elements, in the cave, you had a roof over your head. It's 55 degrees. You know, you had some protection, you know, for, you know, life in the Army, it might have been a better arrangement.
I would imagine much more comfortable than the winter elements that can happen here in the Valley for sure. That's another question to bring up. Is the cave does stay at 55 degrees throughout the year. It's like a consistent temperature, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And that's typical for caverns anywhere, pretty much. It's almost like a cave element.
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think that's an incredible, just incredible history. What can you tell us in terms of knowing so much about this? And I can't claim to be a Civil War buff, but I find it very, very interesting. How did the Valley play a pivotal role in the course of the Civil War?
Well, I think the most pivotal role was the breadbasket of the Confederacy. As I was saying earlier, they grew a lot of wheat here and small grains. Prior to the opening of the Midwest, as sort of the small grain center of the America, Shenandoah Valley served that function. And so it was a very important source of food to the Confederate Army, especially to Lee's Army. And therefore, it was a strategic objective of the Union's army to end that supply of food.
Now, that's called the burning, right? There's a whole book about it.
Yeah, that was Sheridan's Burning of the Valley, which went about as I recall, went about as far as the North River above south of Bridgewater, but I could be fact checked on that. The idea was to lay waste to this breadbasket of the Confederacy.
It sounded, they have some information too about that at the Hardy C. Higgins house when you visit it in downtown Harrisonburg and talk about it. That sounds like that was very devastating for the Confederacy.
Very devastating for the residents of the Valley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know what happened to them after that burning? Do you have any information about that?
You're probably better to ask more of a Civil War historian about that. But I don't think, you know, when you lose your house, your barn, and you lose all your food and your animals, it wasn't going to be a good winter.
No. No, that's a lot of displacement and devastation for sure. But we're in the business of caverns. I'm so glad you guys opened it up. I want to talk a little bit about how much time should the Laffers plan on spending for a visit to Melrose Civil War Caverns?
I would allocate about an hour for the tour. Hopefully this spring, well, I know for a fact this spring we will be opening up a gift shop. And so there'll be an area for people to peruse and maybe some activities to do. So an hour for the tour, getting in, getting out, depending on how fast people walk, and then maybe a little time for some shopping and other activities yet to be announced.
Oh, I'm excited to hear about those. This is going to be so much fun. And how should they wear something? You know, what kinds of things should they be mindful about when they're preparing for a cave tour?
So fortunately, we have no steps in our caverns, which is great, you know, makes it easier. It also maintains a constant 55 degree temperature. So you might want to bring a light jacket, but you're not going to be freezing.
Very good. And how can they schedule a tour? What's the process?
So you can either call our number, which is 540-434-3500. You can email us at info@melrosecaverns.com, or you can book online at our website. You go to Cave Tours, book now, and select a time.
Okay, we'll put that information in the show notes for the Laffers so they can also find it there. But yeah, speaking of these events, maybe some you can't tell us about now, and that's okay. But they do have special events there, and I think weddings also. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, we started doing weddings in 2010, 2011. And we've continued to operate that since. We've done a lot of renovations to the lodge there. The lodge originally was a Civil War museum. Upon redoing that, we've had great success in the wedding business. One of the really cool things that we do is that people will take bridal photos, engagement photos in the caverns, and even have their ceremony down there sometimes.
Whoa. How many people can you put in there for wedding ceremony?
Oh, we've put up to 60 or 70 in there, but usually the smaller the better. We've also zoomed it out for people when we couldn't fit enough people in there. We have 4 ceremony sites across the property, 3 outside, inside in case it's raining or winter, and then inside the cave.
It is a beautiful, venue for many reasons and such special history that you can do a lot there. You can have a wedding there. You can have it inside, outside, just like you said, and could take a cave tour, and you can be a part of something super special right here in the Valley with so much rich history. I did not, again, know about to Harrisonburg from your family dating back to the 1700s. That's just a wow factor right there, I just have to say. So as we wrap up here, can you share with the Laughers how they can follow Melrose Civil War Caverns on social media or otherwise to get more information? And I know you gave that information a little bit just a minute, but you know, it'll be good to hear it one more time.
So the best places to follow us are on Instagram at Melrose Caverns, Facebook, Melrose Caverns, or you can email us at info@melrosecaverns.com if you have specific inquiries. We like to post photos of our events, cool things that we're doing in the cave, just different little tidbits of history sometimes that people can read and enjoy.
Website.
And our website is melrosecaverns.com.
I like that. I like that you put that in there, Dick. That's great. You guys are both just wonderful. Laughers, we'll be sure to put that information in the show notes for you as well. Thank you so much, Dick and Jack. This has been so informational, so fun. I really enjoyed talking to you both about all things Melrose Civil War Caverns today.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you very much.
Me too. I'm so excited. Laughers, again, you can get more information about these caverns at melrosecaverns.com. Again, we will put that information, their contact information, in the show notes for you so you can plan your underground history of the Civil War adventure with them and experience it yourself. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, Laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
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 Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.